This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It is great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. On today's Noon Business Hour, we'll also take a look at how grocery stores nationwide, including many here in Chicagoland, are working hard to keep employees safe. Personal Finance Wednesday, a lot of Americans are going to be getting checks from the government. What should you do with those to maximize that money? The White House and Senate leaders have struck a major deal totaling more than $2 trillion to provide a jolt to an economy struggling amid the coronavirus pandemic. Joining us to discuss the package, Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. He's also an economist. You can find him online at andrewbush.com. Andy, do we have many details yet out of this package? What are you hearing?
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts here. One of the biggest things that's in there, and I don't want to get too technical on this thing, but there's a provision for $500 billion for something called the Exchange Stabilization Fund. This is something at the Treasury that they can that the Federal Reserve, our central bank, can lever up to $4 trillion for lending. Now, that's massive alone with what they're doing. So keep that in mind. And then, you know, just coming down the pike with all of these different programs that are out there, there's going to be $1,200 sent out to every person, plus I believe another $400 to $600 per child. There's extended unemployment benefits. There's a lot of discussion about lending to distressed industries and how much is that going to be. There is just a whole pile of goodies in here. You're hearing a $2 trillion number, but if you combine it with what the Fed can do, the Federal Reserve, our central bank, it's almost $6 trillion in total, and that's 30% of GDP. That's a big bazooka.
It is. And I'm wondering, though, if this thing continues. Obviously, the pandemic's not over. New York City is really getting swamped right now. Other areas may. So if we're looking a few months down the line and this is still really rough, does the government have the capability to do something more? I mean, it seems like this is going to help in the near term. But what about the long term?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And that's something that when you look at this situation, everyone's trying to get a handle on exactly what this pandemic is. Is it something that is as bad as people are saying, that we need to shut down the economy and not let people move around for 3 to 4 months? If that's what they do, if that's what leaders do, if Governor Pritzker decides to do that, and again, it's the governors that are going to drive these shutdowns of the economy, well, then we're looking at a really serious recession that is going to be quite ugly, and $6 trillion may not cut it. If, on the other hand, that this pandemic is not as bad as people think it is, in the sense that the mortality rate is much lower, significantly lower than what we think or what we currently know, well, then that paints a much different picture. And then you go back to President Trump's comments over the last 48 hours talking about wanting to reopen up the economy. Then, you know, then we're looking at a very different economic situation. And again, I don't want to, you know, I'm not downplaying the deaths or anything like that. Those are horrific. And that's why we're doing what we're doing. But there may be more light at the end of the tunnel if we get more data to see the size of how many infections there actually are. And then that can provide us some context to look at the mortality rate.
Thanks so much. Always good analysis from Andrew Bush. You can find him online at his website, andrewbush.com. Just ahead, the latest on COVID-19, including a look at how New York is dealing with a surge of cases. The latest now on America's COVID-19 hotspot, that is New York City. Michelle Cortez is joining us, a health reporter at Bloomberg News based in Minneapolis. Michelle, what's the latest that you're hearing about New York City?
Well, they are getting closer and closer to, you know, being completely overwhelmed there in terms of having enough ICU beds and ventilators and whatnot. The thing that's interesting about New York is that they are disclosing a lot of this information. We know how many people are dying. We know their ages. And so it is kind of an insight as to what everybody else can expect.
And when it comes to all this medical equipment, I saw New York's governor obviously exasperated because he understandably wants more equipment. But is there just a limit in how the government or companies can ramp up production of these things? I mean, it seems like it would be really difficult to all of a sudden just start producing thousands upon thousands of ventilators, respirators, millions of masks and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it is really a supply chain issue at this point. I mean, so New York did get 2,000 ventilators from the U.S. national stockpile yesterday. They're getting another 2,000 today. The issue is that, of course, across our country, we probably have enough ventilators to handle what New York needs right now. But how do you get them all there? And how do you get enough people to respiratory therapists and nurses and whatnot who have to take care of those patients? Like, the numbers are just overwhelming. And it is just a matter of, it's like a puzzle, trying to fit all the pieces into the right place. And New York is saying, we need them now. As soon as we're done, it's going to hit you guys. We'll move them all to you when you need them. But send them to us now. It's just, how do you do that?
Well, and interesting that you talk about personnel, because it's not only that you need the equipment, but you need enough people to operate the equipment who know what they're doing. And one nurse, one doctor, they can only treat so many patients.
That's it, exactly. And remember, if you're on a ventilator, that's 24 hours a day that somebody has to be looking at it. So it's not just one person, you know, one ventilator, one respiratory therapist. So you need at least three people to go 24 hours, and each respiratory therapist can only at most take care of four patients on a ventilator. So you start really quickly building up the high numbers of people that you need.
So as the government continues social distancing, and a lot of states pretty much have these shelter-in-place orders in place, is that designed to make sure so that cities like Chicago, Orlando, Dallas, the West Coast, other big, big cities, that they don't experience what New York is experiencing right now in some way, maybe trying to slow it down?
That's exactly right, Cisco. What we're seeing in New York is what we're trying to avoid everywhere else. The thing that's going to be interesting is in some areas, not having a lot of coronavirus spreading around, some people are saying, hey, maybe we can open up a little bit and let people start getting back to work and whatnot. And it's going to be an interesting natural experiment if we start doing that, because the fear, of course, is that if you open things up, the virus will get itself well established. And once it's well established, like we're seeing in New York, I mean, they've shut down New York and still the case numbers and the fatalities are going through the roof.
And is there a fear now? We've heard reports of people because of that leaving New York, heading to other places. Is there a chance that that just allows other hotspots to develop as these people who may well have infections are moving around the country?
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. I mean, they're now saying, President Trump is saying, if you're leaving New York, you need to quarantine for 14 days. So New Yorkers are now the hotspot, and they are the people that we all need to be afraid of in terms of potentially infecting other people. The good news about that is that it does work. You know, if you stay isolated for 14 days, if you're infected, if you're not within 6 feet of somebody else, you're not passing on the virus. So they can leave as long as they do it safely. It's just a question of how much do you trust your fellow citizens.
Now, what are they saying? I mean, as far as people sort of getting a little stressed as they're in the house all the time, I would guess that there's still government encouragement, as long as you're at least 6 or 7 or 8 feet away from someone, to still get outside a little bit, walk around the block, get a little exercise, so you don't get super stressed being all cooped up.
Yeah, well, that's exactly true. The mental health stresses on everyone are absolutely real. In New York, they're thinking about shutting down all the streets so that people can go outside and have more space to roam. They're talking about closing the parks because people are congregating in the parks there, but there's just too many people and not enough park space. So if they close the roads, they figure they'll allow people to space out a little bit more. So it is true in some areas where it's bad, they are talking about trying to get people to not even go outside so that we can get it under control. But as long as you have enough space between you and other people, you should be safe. It's also just another reminder of the fact that once it starts spinning out of control, no matter how hard you lock it down, it takes a while to get it back. under control.
Thanks so much. Good information. Appreciate talking with you. Michelle Cortez, a health reporter at Bloomberg News. She's on regular conference calls with the World Health Organization and the CDC, so she always brings us the latest information. Thank you, Michelle. Up next, how grocery stores are trying to protect their employees amid the coronavirus pandemic.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Grocery stores are considered essential businesses during the coronavirus outbreak. Let's talk about how companies are working to protect their employees. Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. Phil, always good to have you on the show. As we talk about grocery stores here, this is important. I mean, these employees, when we say essential, if they don't go to work, then the grocery stores close.
Exactly. And actually, these are the new first responders. We always talk about that term in case of emergencies and fires and hurricanes. But our first responders are now everybody who works on farms, to the delivery people, to certainly the people who are working in supermarkets. And the supermarket companies recognize that, and they're actually doing things to not only protect them, but to reward them.
And so what are they doing? I mean, you're getting little like cash bonuses, or what do you think will happen?
Yes, there are cash bonuses, but probably the most significant thing that you're going to see, Walmart is the first one who's starting to do this, is adding sneeze guards at all 4,700 of its stores and at 600 Sam's Club stores. So if you think about going into a salad bar and there's that little piece of plexiglass so somebody can't, you know, sneeze on the food, it's similar to that but larger. And the question's going to be whether or not that's now going to become a permanent fixture in all of these stores. Also, what they're doing is, and this started out in Australia with Woolworths and with Coles, they're actually putting markers on the floor to designate six-foot distances so that you are standing within 6 foot. One of the problems that we've had, especially in some of the stores that have the senior hours, people are lining up at 6 a.m. to be able to get their food, but they're standing within 6 inches of each other. So now they're starting to do that on the outside as well. Also, what's really interesting to me is Walmart has a new solution to actually clean their shopping carts. So we're seeing it, you know, across the entire store, not just, you know, those surfaces that we normally touch on the frozen food cases being cleaned more often and so on. But we're really seeing a whole new level of food sanitation at all of these supermarkets. Are also starting to shorten their hours. You and I have talked about that, you know, months ago, that we started to see a lot of those 24-hour stores closing earlier. Well, now they're closing so that they can properly sanitize the stores. And my hope is, frankly, that this is going to be a practice that continues. In addition to Walmart, Albertsons is also putting down the floor decals and those sneeze guards. Kroger is also, for the first retailer doing it, letting employees wear protective masks and gloves. That has not been required by the CDC, and in fact, it's actually been said not necessary to do it, but Kroger is taking the lead on it. And also Target, they're also putting up the floor decals, the distancing signs, closing, and also a lot of the retailers, like Hy-Vee was the first one to do it, are actually saying, hey, don't bring your reusable bags in. We don't know what's in them. We don't know how clean that they are. So we're not going to charge you anymore that 5 cents or that 10 cents for the paper, the plastic bag. We're going to give it to you free, but keep home those reusable bags. We just don't want that.
Thanks so much, Phil Lempert. Good insight. Phil is founder of SupermarketGuru.com. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, getting the most from the economic stimulus check that's going to be arriving in mailboxes soon.
News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM and WBBMNewsRadio.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. As the number of deaths from coronavirus rises in Illinois, a suburban mayor provides some relief to residents and and businesses. Americans should be getting a stimulus check from the government in the coming weeks. We'll discuss how to best use it. Consumers could get some assistance from credit card companies during the COVID-19 pandemic. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 1,106 points, the NASDAQ is up 171, and the S&P is up 98, oil up nearly 2%. It's 47 degrees in Chicagoland with beautiful sunshine heading up to a high of 58 degrees. The latest numbers on COVID-19 in Illinois show an increase of 250 cases yesterday to 1,535, with four more deaths, bringing the total to 16. As that data was being released, Governor Pritzker commented on President Trump's handling of the pandemic and his desire to reopen the country as soon as possible.
I don't think he's listening to the science. I think that he is, you know, operating, you know, he's looking at the stock market, which I know he's essentially judges himself by.
Mayor Lightfoot expected to update things in the city at 1 o'clock this afternoon, Governor Pritzker at 2:30, and President Trump's federal briefing at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Stick with WBBM for all the latest. A northwest suburb is lending a hand to its residents and businesses.
Elk Grove Village President Craig Johnson says his village is financially strong and has always planned for tough times. That's why the village has announced a nearly $3 million relief package. Elk Grove is giving more than 11,000 homeowners a $200 credit each towards their water bills. It's waiving annual licensing fees for more than 2,000 businesses.
This outbreak has placed plenty of economic stress on our family and our businesses. So if there's something we can do as a village to make things just a little bit easier, we're going to do it.
The village is using money from its reserve fund to provide the breaks. Bernie Tafoya, News Radio, 105.9 FM.
If you're among the many now working from home, ask your smart speaker to play WBBM News Radio for all the latest developments. The Noon Business Hour, presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. The markets are rising, the Dow now up a little more than 5%. Let's see what's going on. Paul Nolte, portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management here in Chicago. Paul, what do you make of what you're seeing today?
Well, we finally got a little bit of a bounce. Started yesterday on the anticipation that we were going to get a bill that got passed on the Senate side, still working through the House. And so this week we've got the Fed bazooka on Monday, and we're getting the fiscal side of it later on this week. The last part of this three-part stool is going to be the health care side, and seeing the number of new cases on a daily basis starting to slow down, or at least the rate of growth starting to slow. But right now the market has been pushed down so much so quickly that what we're seeing is just really kind of a snapback rally here on the back of at least some good fiscal and monetary news.
And I'm not trying to be a downer here or anything like that, or cynical, but given how far we've come down, again, as opposed to more losses, obviously that's a good thing. But, you know, for example, you got the S&P up a little less than 4% today compared to where it was a month ago. We still have a ways to go.
We do. And, you know, that's the thing is the market's going to take a while to settle. I mean, if we take a look at other instances where we had market declines like this in 87, 08, even 1929, if you want to go back that far, you had a period of 2 to 3 months where the market's kind of bounced around a lot to try to find an even level, if you will, before finally resuming and going up. If you're willing to look out a couple years, the picture looks a lot brighter. Obviously, when the markets come down this much, the future does look a lot brighter. We will get back to the old highs. It's just going to take some time to get there.
Yeah, and so if you're you're looking to make some money off of this, I mean, obviously, some of these stocks are really depressed. Some quality stocks out there are, it seems like, way below where they should be, even in a regular market.
There are. You know, there's a lot that's gone on sale. Certainly the averages are down a little bit over 30% down at the lows. You saw a lot of stocks that were down over 50%. And again, as you mentioned, some very good names. So what we're trying to do with our accounts is we do have some cash. We've raised some in February and early March. We're now going to stage that in over the course of the next 10 weeks, maybe 3-4 months or so, as we see the health part of the virus and the outbreaks hopefully slow over that period of time, but not trying to pick where the bottom is, but just put that money back into the market over a period of time.
And that could be, I mean, you mentioned sort of doing it incrementally, but I have a lot of people who are sort of asking me off air what they should do. It seems like when the markets are down, you know, 30-some percent, even if you put in a little now, at some point, if it's not money you need right away, it's going to be a good investment.
Right, and that's where you look at and say, okay, do I need this money in the next, say, 2 years? And, you know, certainly if you're looking at 401k investments, what we're suggesting for those that are able to is maybe bump up your contribution a little bit. You know, if you're at 6, 7, 8%, maybe take 1 or 2% and add it in and maybe shift the portfolio a little bit more toward equities and away from bonds to take advantage of, again, what we think will be a pretty good period of time over the next 3 to 5 years. Next 3 to 5 weeks, I have no idea, but I'm feeling a little bit better that the next 3 to 5 years we'll see some good returns in the equity market.
What would you say to, and maybe what you're saying to some of your clients, to settle people down? Because it seems like you have some people really worried about the steep drops, and then other people who are getting kind of antsy about not being able to get in time, you know, feeling like they've already missed the bottom.
Yeah, no, it is a balancing act, and both will tell you, you know, I didn't want to lose any money anyway, and now that we have, you know, how do we hurry up and recoup it? And unfortunately, the markets are an escalator up and an elevator down, and we've gotten the elevator part, and it's going to be an escalator back. So it's going to take some time, and patience is really the key here. And we can point to those other periods, 2000, 2001, 2008, 87, where patience paid off. And as long as you're staying with the program and continue to make the investments over a period of time, you will be rewarded, just not instantly.
What do you think of some of the quality, really long-term dividend stocks? You're getting a really nice yield right now at these prices. And yeah, they may have to slow or even cut their dividend for a while here, but at some point that'll be back and it could be a pretty decent yield.
It could be, and you're right. There may be some dividend cuts that we see. So I'm a little nervous about some companies where you're seeing dividend yields of 6% or higher. There may be some companies that will cut back the dividend to kind of hang on to cash while they go through this period. So we're on the watch for those. We're still very interested in the companies that, at least coming in, had very good cash flows and reasonable payout ratios. So the amount of earnings that they paid out in the way of dividends will probably allow them to maintain those dividends all the way through this environment. We think we probably are looking at 9 maybe to 12 months of kind of tough sledding for earnings as the economy comes back. We probably won't see normal type earnings until sometime in 2021.
Thanks as always for the analysis. Paul Nolte, portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management. Just ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, making the most of a government stimulus check.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour. The economic stimulus package set to be approved by the Senate today will include direct government checks to Americans. Let's talk about the best way to use the influx of cash. Ed Jurtzen is joining us, a certified financial planner at Mack Investment Securities here in Chicago, also past national president of the Financial Planning Association. Ed, we're waiting for the details when the Senate passes this and then the House, but it looks like some families could be seeing a few thousand dollars here.
Yeah, first and foremost, Cisco, thanks for having me on and wishing you, the BBM team, and all your listeners well. You know, it's hopeful. The bill's not signed yet, but we're hopeful that individuals, families, and businesses are going to get, you know, some speedy relief in regards to direct checks coming to them. $1,200 for those individuals making under $75,000 a year, and for couples making under $150,000, $2,400. But the important part is when these checks come, now what do you do with the money? And if we look back in previous issues where checks were kind of sent out to people, making sure you spend that money wisely is going to be really important in the coming weeks and months.
So does it depend on your financial situation as to what you should choose to do?
Well, we encourage all of our clients to have a spending plan. So in normal times, it's a function of how much is coming in and how much is going out, just to be aware where you're spending. But we're in a different situation, obviously, today. We're talking about a crisis spending plan. And it's really important for individuals to understand the priority and needs. You know, things that we used to take kind of for granted, eating out and things like that, has changed dramatically. So things like rent and mortgage and basic groceries, insurance, utility bills, those are the important things that should come first once these checks come, and then understand through that spending plan how long that money can last.
And if you are still employed, you know, if you still have that income coming in like you have before, obviously a lot of people are unemployed, but there are also a lot of people still getting paychecks. Should that money be put aside in case, if this drags on, you may be employed today, but you may not be 2 or 3 months from now?
That's a great comment, Cisco, because now is not a time for spending frivolously, obviously. So if you do have a paycheck, and I just heard from a younger worker the other day how grateful they were to have a job, which really made me feel good because they understand what's going on. So, yes, so be very vigilant in terms of your spending. Keep that spending in check in regards to where your money is going. And if you have an ability to keep those monies safe in a bank on a side just in case things do, you know, get worse, you're good to go and you don't have to panic and try to get resources from other places.
And you mentioned a bank, so people shouldn't necessarily take this check and immediately go put it in the stock market.
Yeah, you know what? The only thing that is going to be certain for the upcoming foreseeable future is uncertainty. And you're better to have money in the bank, FDIC insured assets and deposits, and have a little bit of cash on hand just in case. So it's good to have those monies at hand. You could try to speculate in the stock market, but it's folly at this point in time in regards to what's going on. One more thing I'd like to add, Cisco. One of the things we're seeing is some of our clients have reached out, and both myself, in terms of people getting emails and texts in terms of financial scams and trying to provide fast relief in terms of funds. I'm asking your listeners to be very vigilant in regards to how they're online and text and emails and replying to ways of quick funds, because some of those people out there are just trying to rip people off, which is really sad in today's environment.
Thanks so much. Always good insight from Ed Jurtzen, Certified Financial Planner at MAC Investment Securities. That's Personal Finance Wednesday. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday. Still to come today, getting help with your credit cards during a tough financial time.
You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Credit card companies are offering customer assistance amid COVID-19 financial hardship. We're joined by Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com. Ted, before we find out what sort of help is available, who might qualify for this sort of help? Do you need to let your credit card company know something's happened or provide some sort of documentation? What does that look like?
You definitely need to let your card company know. And if there's a long wait on the phone, I would suggest maybe online chat or a text message or social media. But most people can qualify. The guidelines are not very strict or very formal. You basically just need to say, I'm having trouble making my next payment, and there's a good chance they'll work with you.
And what sort of working with you might they do?
The best is if they can skip your next payment and not charge interest. That's something that Apple Card has already come out and said they are offering for this month. We're also seeing that on more of a case-by-case basis with American Express and with Capital One. There's lots of other issuers offering help in the form of deferred payments with interest, which is not as good. There's also a lot of fee waivers going on. Sometimes they'll even raise your credit limit upon request, although you need to be careful with that one.
Now, why is that? Why be careful of the raised credit limit?
Just because, I mean, I know these are tough times for a lot of people and we're all trying to make ends meet, but there is that danger of overspending and then at some point the bill's going to come due. And credit card rates are still really high. Even with these recent Fed cuts, I think the average credit card rate is going to settle around 16%. A lot of people are paying 20, even 24%. So while you need to do whatever you need to do, I would be careful. Look for ways to protect your budget, protect your credit score. Don't get overextended.
And important maybe for people to be reminded that whatever a credit card company offers, it's not going to be long term. They're not going to get rid of a balance or anything like that. At some point, you are going to have to pay all this money back.
That's right. There's no free lunch. And also consider your credit score. typically when you enroll in one of these programs, and the same goes for a hurricane or a tornado or flood or some natural disaster, you can typically get some sort of disaster relief notation on your credit report. Sometimes they call it forbearance. Basically, late payments are not going to count against you if you speak up. You need to do it on the front end, though. Don't wait until they have to track you down.
Yeah, and that also would help with the credit, right? So you don't get your credit dinged by waiting until it's too late.
That's really important. So yes, help is available. You do need to ask for it. It's not automatic. So these are some of the things I would ask for. And everything's negotiable, right? But when you call up, be honest about your circumstances. I would seek to get payments waived without interest accruing and make sure my credit score is not going to be hurt. Those would be one and two on the wish list.
And then prepare for this to go on for a while, right? I mean, it's not like this is necessarily going to be over in a matter of just a few weeks.
And I think that's an important point about the stimulus checks that most of us will be getting soon, hopefully. You don't want to spend all that in one place. I mean, I know that times are tough, but you've got to conserve some cash. So if you can kick the can down the road a little bit without interest accruing, I wouldn't be in a hurry to pay down that credit card debt if I can get an interest waiver. I think you need to keep some of that cash on hand for emergencies, groceries, other near-term bills. You can also get some help on your mortgage or your rent. So think about cash flow flexibility.
Thanks so much, Ted Rossman. He is an industry analyst at creditcards.com. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the radio.com app.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.